being able to play the harp must be amazing. And you're using it for a great cause as well. This is the fact that you go into Gloucester Royal Hospital, you're in the neonatal baby unit, and you're playing the harp to babies and their mums and dads, their families. How on earth, Mark, did this all come about?
Well, my wife and I both thought that it would be a really great idea to go and play some music in the hospital. There are a lot and lots of people who play the harp therapeutically, but what we wanted to do was maybe just go and play, give a little concert or something like that. We really didn't have a very clear idea what we wanted to do exactly, but we went to Gloucester Hospital, to the neonatal unit, and spoke to Mel Randalls and Karen Tomasino, who are great people and who are really up for anything like that. And we applied for some funding and got it from Youth Music and local charity Gloucestershire Music Makers, and Make Music Gloucestershire also put in some match funding. And I went and learnt how to play in hospitals with a group up in Derby, and then read a lot of medical papers about music and health, and finally launched myself back into the hospital, not doing concerts in the little room, but actually playing for the babies in intensive care and in the regular rooms, and also to the parents who are about to take their babies home. And it's been a really interesting musical journey for me as well, just to work out how do you approach this ethically, you know, when people have gone through sometimes quite a traumatic, painful process, you know, a new baby, particularly if it's ill, in that unit, you're not there because you want to be, you're there probably because you didn't expect to be. And suddenly you have a baby that needs a lot of attention, and it can put a strain on people's relationships. And to have somebody just, you know, a bloke pitch up with a harp is just quite an odd experience in any case. So we were quite careful about how we introduced it. I sat in the corner and played first, and then I was able to ask people, did they want music or not? We had some posters with the music on so they could scan it with their phone and listen to some of the music and just check that, you know, see how they felt about it. And I think in all that time, maybe two people, you know, for whatever reason, and it's entirely fine, said no. And all the rest said yes. And it is absolutely a choice. I'm not trying to impose it on anyone. But I've made some fantastic friends and relationships with people, including parents who've we've interviewed for the project, and who have appreciated the music when they're stuck in the hospital for days and days and days. And so that's sort of where the project's gone, really.
When you're playing the harp, what do you think then? And you know, obviously, we know that music has an effect on your mood. You know, it can make you happy, it can make you sad, it can make you cry, it can make you, you know, laugh and feel joyous. And we know, and studies have shown that, you know, there is an effect on the brain and on mood and things like that. But, you know, specifically for these very, very unique situations that, you know, mothers and babies and, you know, fathers and babies as well are going through in the hospital environment, what do you think it is about the experience that you're giving them that is helping these people? I mean, do you know about, maybe, I don't know, the sort of the more medical side of things? Do you know if that's has much of an impact, or is it more of a general mood thing, you know, just making everybody feel happier and relaxed?
I think it's both, really. There's been a lot of research done on young babies, and one of the issues around neonatal is because each baby is in there has a very unique set of conditions and different ages, and some of them, a lot of them, are premature as well, and so it's quite difficult to actually track. There's no sort of reliable control, so it's quite difficult to track music. One of the really fascinating bits of research I read, though, was about a group that had looked at heart rate for 30 minutes before, during live music, and for 30 minutes afterwards. And what they discovered was really interesting was that actually during live music there didn't seem to be that much difference, but actually afterwards the heart rate had really gone down with the live music, but not with the recorded. And I have my own theories about why that is, but what interests me about the research is that they never bothered to measure it for more than half an hour because they never realised there might be an effect. So that's a bit of research that could still be done. And I think what's happening is the babies are processing that sound. The other interesting thing about the research for me is that none of it almost mentioned the time of day. I read 50 papers and almost none of it mentioned when things were done, you know, as in what time. And when you go into hospital, you realise it's a very timeless place. There's noise all the time, quite a lot of light on, people having conversations. And there's something about music, I think, which is repetitive. And it lets the babies, it's my own theory, lets the babies get used to anticipating, remembering musical phrases. And then I think what happens is afterwards they get zonked and they process it. And we've found this with our other work with children with multiple learning difficulties, that they get very tired afterwards. They're very bright at the time, get very tired afterwards. I think that's what's going on with babies. So it is a medical thing, but I think actually for the parents, and for a particular parent that I talked to this week, who had been in there for 90 days with his baby, you know, and that's a long time to spend in a hospital going slowly, you know, bonkers. He said that it was just really nice to have a bit of normality, because when you have a baby that's very ill, you just don't want to leave it. You don't even want to go for a walk. You just don't want to leave its side. You want to stay there with your baby. And he said it was really lovely to have somebody come in and just offer a bit of normality from the outside world for 10 minutes, just to play some music. And I play it for both. I play it for the babies and for the parents. And I figure that the babies are having a lot of medical attention. But the parents really are there only because the babies are there. And so what I wanted to do was do something for the relationship between the two, do something for both of them that they could share, so that when I play, I'll play and I'll just not look at them. I'll let them share that private moment themselves.
I find I can, you know, almost sort of picture that happening, and you know, the music is just so relaxing and soothing as well. It doesn't feel like it's particularly invasive, does it? It's a background thing, and it's very relaxing and soothing. Exactly. And you are willing to sort of play us a song that you put together for this is actually for somebody that you did. For a baby and
it was parents. In fact, for the people that I mentioned there, Paul and Louise and their little baby Barney, and they've given me permission to use the pictures and their names, which is just lovely of them, because it makes it a bit more human. They were in that hospital for 90 days, and their baby, fortunately, you know, went home, and they're very, very pleased. And I've seen a picture of him now. He looks very happy with food all over his face. And when I was playing music, I would play gentle pieces from, you know, traditional pieces, and I started to think, yeah, you know, I'm going to run out of music if I carry on doing this for weeks and weeks. And so I started to make up tunes based on babies' names. I thought, it was a project I started about 1998. I thought it'd be a great business idea to do ringtones based on babies' names, or people's names. And it never really came to anything. But I then thought, wow, I can reuse this idea. So I took the notes of his name, translated them into notes, and he said he liked Mozart. So I made a little tune that was a bit Mozartian. So I can play you Barney's tune if you like.
Yes, please do. Please do.
So just so you know, these are the notes that his name spells. So just those notes. And then what I do is I take those notes and make them into a tune, just extend it. So this is Barney's tune, just a minute or so.
That was beautiful.
And I know that little Barney somewhere, I don't quite sure where he lives. He lives somewhere in Gloucestershire, and I know he's probably listening to that right now.
That was, and you do that for, you know, you're writing the music for each family that you meet.
Yeah, for each one. I could do it in 20 seconds. I got very good at it. And
because you're, how many babies in a day? How many families do you think you might see in a day?
Maybe 20, 30.
So you need to be quick.
So over there. I mean, the unit
there's only so many hours in a day.
Exactly. The unit has about 720 babies a year. And of course, a lot of them you see more than once. So they say, oh, the heart man's back. And, or I've missed the heart man. Or, so I also had a little book that I used to keep by, you know, for feedback. And one day there was an operation going on. And I put in the book, you know, I played today. Didn't I avoided that area. There's operation going on. And one of the nurses the following week said, you know, if you want to, and the consultants are happy and you're happy, why don't you try playing for some? So I started to play for operations and procedures as well. And the eye exams, where they have a big light shone in their eyes, which they didn't like, called retinopathy. It's they check the retinas. And so I played for those. And the first time I played for one, apparently a baby slept through it. And that's the first time it's ever happened for them. It's very, very unusual for babies to do that because they don't like the procedure. So I started doing that too. And
The impact that this project is having, and how seriously it's been taken by the hospital. And,
oh, it's great. They've been great.
And by the doctors. And clearly they can see there's a huge benefit there to families. Mark, or the heart man, Mark Harmer no longer. We're just going to call you the heart.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, we're just going to call you the heart man from now on.
I get called lots of things. Yeah.
Special lunchtime guest today. So stay with us. There's lots more to talk about. And your time as a man at the BBC as well in London. And all sorts of things. So Mark Harmer, your real name, our special lunchtime guest today. Fascinating listening to you talking about the fact that you're going into Gloucester Royal Hospital, into the baby unit there, and playing the harp to them. And clearly it's going really well, and parents are really pleased that you're around and able to do that for them. They call you the heart man.
They do. They call me the heart man. The project's nearly coming to an end. I think we've got another couple of visits funded. We're just writing all the end of the project's reports. I've just commissioned 1,000 CDs. So all the music that I've written will get given free in the form of 1,000 CDs to Gloucester Hospital, and they can give them to parents. And we put it all on the website as well, free. It's all paid for, so it's all freely available. So that's fun. And we've applied to our Children in Need to do some more work. We don't know if we'll get that yet, but for me to train another couple of people so we can keep the project going for another couple of years. So
the hope is, even though the project is coming to an end at the moment, that hopefully you'll get the funding and it can...
Absolutely.
And it can continue.
I mean, they're great people there, and they say that it's sort of, you know, expanded their own feelings about neonatal care as well, the medical side. So it's just been a really fantastic time. You know, I think when I've sat there with a harp, and you can see it here, you know, wooden instrument with strings, I've sat there amongst all this medical equipment, and I just thought, this is just bonkers. It's just that shit crazy, if I can use that term. But I have now, so it's too late, isn't it? But it's bonkers. But it's also, I've also felt it's one of the most amazing things I've ever done. So it sort of feels like that at the same time. It's just been great.
Now, I hear that you've always been musical. Even the three-year-old three-year-old Mark Harmer, who was given a rather strange instrument. This is in Singapore, isn't it? So talk me through, is this your earliest encounter with a musical instrument? Is this the first time that you...
Probably is, actually. Yeah. I don't even know what the instrument was called, although when I was... first going out with my then girlfriend, now wife, we went to Camden Lock Market, and I saw one of these things, and it's some sort of strange orange coloured varnished wooden box with typewriter keys, you know, real typewriter keys and a string. I mean, it's obviously some strange instrument that's been cooked up, but I remember the smell of it. It had this varnish, had the most amazing smell.
So it's sort of like an accordion type thing.
No, it's just a string. It's just like a one string guitar with a keyboard. It's a really, it's like nothing I've ever seen before or since. I've seen odd ones online, but I've never encountered one in real life. But I suppose that's, sound has always been a passion for me. So it's been, I guess there are people who are very visual and there are people who are very sound orientated. And for me, there's something quite different about being a sound orientated person, because you're much more used to sequences and time and how things develop. And so that's been a sort of thread through all of my work, really. And I guess I was either the instrument influenced me or I just got into music in some way. Great fun, though.
So when you were growing up, what were you learning to play?
The piano, I went to a boarding school where all the pianos were in TV rooms, so you can imagine that wasn't going to be very popular. So I ended up learning to play the organ, because that was the only place I could lock myself away in a church, and I did that for a while. I haven't really done that much since, although I'm actually taking part in an event playing the organ in Peterborough Cathedral in May, which will be a sort of sound tour of the cathedral's history, and that's going to be great fun, organised by a great friend of mine, Andy Lowings, in Cambridgeshire, and we've got all sorts of strange stuff going on, you know, sort of singing and musicians and bells and all sorts.
Wow, that sounds like a fantastic event.
It's going to be great.
When did the harp become something that you felt passionate about?
That's intimately tied up with the BBC, because my wife, who has also worked for the BBC, between us, we worked for the BBC for about 30 years. She was in the BBC for 10 years, and she was an outside broadcast camera person. So she was living in Putney, and I would go up to see her and wait for her on a Saturday night to finish whatever broadcast she was doing, some rugby match somewhere, and she was learning the harp. So while I was waiting, I just sit and strum this thing, and I taught myself to play completely, and then I married her and kept the harp, really. And I still use it for gigs. It's the one I use with the band. This one I bought as a birthday present for myself 5 years ago, but they're all little instruments. They go in the car. They're just really nice. And when you play the violin, I was hearing some of the people earlier talk about the violin and the viola, there is a sort of quality to the violin, which when I play it sounds like a cat being pulled backwards out of a toaster. And it's just very difficult to actually play and make it sound nice. Whereas the harp, you know, you can almost drop it down the stairs and it still sounds great. I mean, I actually have dropped it down the stairs. It almost
does. Don't do that again, Mark. No, don't do that again. There's a lot of people relying on you exactly. With the harp. Don't do that again. The time then at the BBC, what were you doing then? It sounds rather exciting. This is sort of wrapped up in world service, am I right?
It was world service, yeah. I always wanted to join the BBC, and the thing that really attracted me was the idea that you could do lots of different things. And I think I'm that sort of person that loves doing, you know, if I see an opportunity, it's fun to do, I'll do it, especially if it avoids, you know, real work, like, you know, doing the accounts or whatever. And so I joined the BBC as a studio manager, so basically doing the technical control of radio programmes, making sure they ran to time and things like that, editing speech in about 36 languages, which was an interesting experience. And they recruited a lot of musicians for that because they reckoned we'd be good at hearing, you know, the speech patterns of Indonesian or Arabic or whatever it was. So I did quite a lot of that. I did sound effects. I was the sound effects recordist for a year. And I even went to Switzerland and persuaded... I had this bizarre memory of persuading some woman on a mountainside farm in Switzerland to lend me her cowbells so I could record them. And I also did a lot of training and I started to do quite a lot of TV and sort of teach myself quite a lot of visual stuff as well, because I realised that was an area I could develop. So, yeah, doing a lot of stuff like that. Always interesting.
And developing that, actually, this is all to do with... your hearing.
That's right.
Now, this is so for somebody that's quite musical and being faced with a problem with your hearing, I can imagine that would for anybody that's just quite a scary time, but for you, when you know your work and everything's wrapped up in that, must have been quite a stressful time.
It was very, very difficult. I had a really bad ear infection in one ear, and for about a week I basically couldn't stand up. I just had horrible dizziness, and then when it gradually got better to a point, and then it didn't get any better anymore, so I sort of, that's permanent, unfortunately. And then the other ear started to have problems with the bones, and so I had to make a really big decision, because obviously having only one really decent ear to hear with, I had to make a decision about whether, you know, it could be operated on. And in the end, I decided to go for the risk. And it's an operation where they basically keep you awake-ish and take the ear apart and take the bones out and replace them. And it's an extraordinary experience.
Why do they keep you partly awake?
Just so that you can tell them when it's worked. So you get this really weird thing where you've got about 1,000 tons of, you know, a whole scrapyard full of medical equipment attached to your ear, and they say, you know, you can hear bits of conversations like, oh, they've sent us the wrong one, you know.
Oh, stuff. God. Like, you know, you're things. Like, I don't want to know,
let me out. And then they test it, and then your ear eventually recovers, you know, eventually, and it did. And I'm very pleased I had it done. And I'd recorded my Carol Ann's Journey CD, which I'll give you afterwards, which is on Amazon, which is my quick plug. But I recorded that actually when I was really struggling with the hearing, and it was really nice to actually hear it properly and think, oh, that's okay, and it's got good reviews. But I never knew what it sounded like. It was a really bizarre experience. So it's nice that I sort of feel much happier and that I took that risk and it was okay. A brilliant, brilliant surgeon, and, you know.
And now that you can hear and you've heard the work that you recorded and you're happy with it,
yes, you're pleased with it. just as well, really, isn't it?
Well, as well as that, we've been hearing about your time at the BBC and, you know, music's your big passion and sound generally, just very interested in it, aren't you? So much so that I hear that you're onto another very, very interesting project, or I don't know, would you call it a project, which is... working with people who've had cochlear implants.
Yes.
Now, how have you got involved in this, and what exactly is this, what is this about?
This is mainly my wife's projects, but my wife and I have been doing a lot of joint projects, and we've got one at the moment, which is halfway through, which is being for children who have sensory impairments. Really, quite often children who've come from a neonatal hospital and maybe haven't quite developed fully yet. And so we've got a project at the moment that we're jointly working on where I'm writing music for that. And the idea is we use vibration Bluetooth speakers, and we're building an app for it, or getting an app built. So the idea is you can navigate your way through a grid of different things that can help children either stimulate or relax. And so that you can sort of program some music with a wireless app interface. And really then... And it seems to be going really well. The various people in Gloucestershire who are trying it out, and the parents are all loving it. And the latest one is an offshoot of that, and that's mostly my wife's project, which is working on how to encourage children to be able to hear better using cochlear implants. And we think this is very early in the research phase, but we're thinking it will be something to do with getting them to actually not listen so much as actually to be musical, to have musical conversations, and to use various other things like gestures and lights and so forth as a way of learning about, because to me music is something you do. It's lovely to listen to music, but it's actually something, for me, it's something you do, and you do it as a conversation, you do it as a jam session in a pub or you know, talking to parents and playing and writing tunes for their babies. So for me, it's, you know, and for her it's very similar, this whole idea of communication through music is something that she's been very successful with, and she's talked about it in conferences, and we've had this funding to now produce this amazing research, hopefully. So it's very early days. We've only just been granted the money, so it's probably going to be part of a year-long project at least.
They say that there's an app for that,
there will be an app, yeah.
fingers crossed it'll all work out, and will be an app for it. the power of music. When you're not, you know, making music, listening to music, talking about music, or, you know, coming on to radio programmes and talking about music, what are you doing? What does Mark do? Do you have a bit of a break away from
It's
music?
It's the last 3 months have been pretty much full on. I'm just about to start editing this project with this gold lyre of air project, which is a 4,500-year-old reconstructed instrument. And we've done all the recordings for that, about to edit that. But we're also about to start building a house. And we bought a plot of land 4 years ago at the end of our road in Charlton Kings, and we're going to start building soon, we hope.
Wow.
that's the plan.
Okay, that's going to get stressful, isn't it? No?
That's going to be very scary. I'm shaking my head as in, yes, I can't even tell you how stressful that's going to be.
What's the reason why you decided to do this then? I mean, yeah, it is a dream of a lot of people, but very few people go and do it.
I think it was mainly my wife actually just boldly saw this thing and decided that we'd go and buy it. And then having done that, we've done quite a lot of research into... we've learned an awful lot about soil and land and maps and very tedious things like that. But ultimately, it's a home for us and our children. We have three children who all go to local schools. And they're all very musical, as it happens. Although two of them were sacked by their piano teacher for not practicing.
Oh dear!
But they've survived, you know.
Can they play the harp like this then? Can any of them play?
One of them's had a go. Yes. So that's me playing in the background in a recording with my band Slauncher, and we still play around the place as well. By the grey of the hair, that it knows what the future will hold. For the shadows of Scotland stand round her,
mid the gale and the... When your children listen to that, do they not think, oh, I want to play the harp as well? But is there any part of you that's maybe a little bit disappointed that they haven't played it?
Oh, gosh, no. Gosh, no. I think it's something we haven't forced. We have hundreds of instruments in the house because we used to run a music instrument business as well. We have probably 400 instruments in the house, violins, children's instruments, all sorts of strange things.
So just the fact that, you know, no they excuse. Have become interested in music, so it is
despite that, isn't yes. Despite falling over these things in the corridor and, you know, on the stairs and yeah. I wouldn't want to force it on people. I think it's just something you have to discover your own path, really. Mm. And my pupils, my students that I teach, we do stuff where they play things from YouTube, and, you know, I'm really keen to encourage people to play by hearing. You don't have to play from written music, as I think somebody was saying earlier. Written music is a mystery, and you don't have to do that. You can play by hearing, you can play with other people. So I encourage all my young students to do that.
Mm. And the great thing about people putting up videos now online, I mean, it has got a bit bonkers. You know, part of me thinks that, gosh, do you remember just the good old days when you'd, you know, talk to somebody and
yeah, exactly.
You know, in real life, and that was how your day went, you know, and you established eye contact with people and you spoke to them, or, you know. But now it's just, you know, people are sitting in their bedrooms and making these videos, and it has gone a bit bonkers, and I will, you know, I'm going to stick to my guns with that. I do think it's all gone a bit mad. But I am finally understanding that actually it's a really, really, really useful tool, and actually people get very creative with some of the things that they make online. And having made a vlog last year with a guest of mine, just really interesting to see how she puts it together, and, you know, up-and-coming comedian, and she's making these brilliant video blogs about things, which is absolutely fascinating. And so, you know, I kind of understand why people are putting them up there. And now I've used them more recently to learn about different styles of knitting. Right. And, you know, after a very short tutorial by somebody from, by Bron, actually, and it was for another interview, who's based in the forest at the Wool Garden, she taught me, and she said, actually, when you go home, just watch some videos online. And I got stuck at one point, and I just Googled it, and I had a look, and I watched some videos, and I was able to teach myself. And then when I started to learn the ukulele, again, it's been so useful. And I can imagine, actually, if you really want to get... you don't want to pay lots of money for lessons, or maybe you can only afford a few lessons. Actually, learning from the videos online is a brilliant way, isn't it?
I have a pupil in New York that I teach as well, so we teach on Skype. So yeah, I have two local pupils, and a few local pupils in Cheltenham. Yeah, and one in New York that I teach on Skype every so often.
I take it all back. The world hasn't gone bonkers. It's really useful.
And to be honest, I wouldn't have developed the hospital work without the internet, because I've had harpists in America. I've had conversations with them. They're all really interested. I've had two harpists who've decided to take up this work in America because of what I've been doing here.
Wow.
So, you know, and I've had harpists in Sweden who I've talked to. I've talked to the Danish chief medical officer about this work. You know, it's amazing what it opens up. I think it's really amazing what the technology allows you to do.
Yeah. I find that fascinating then, that, you know, other people are being able to, would really like to start a similar thing, and it is all because of the work that they've heard about you doing.
Yeah, yes.
So as well as making the house then, have you got other passions? I mean, do you get much time to explore Gloucestershire and explore the... amazing countryside that we
I do a bit. My little boy loves fossils and things like that, so sometimes you go up onto the very windy hill above Bishop's Cleeve and have a go at some fossil hunting. And other than that, my other passion, I quite enjoy cooking and barbecuing, but then what man doesn't enjoy a barbecue, you know? It brings out the inner thag in you. So I drag a piece of meat on from my cave onto the barbecue and cook that. I quite enjoy that. And I'm looking forward to the warm weather to do that. So I do enjoy cooking and as well. Otherwise, don't know really.
Well, I think you're busy enough. Time. To be honest, yeah, exactly. I think you're busy enough. I think that's more than plenty, Mark. Just stick to what you're good at. Yeah. Don't dilute your time. Well, I really hope that that you know this project is able to keep going, and we will watch this space and see. And see if it does, and what happens next, because clearly it's being, you know, a huge success in the hospital in Gloucester, and hopefully, fingers crossed, they are learning from your example, and soon it'll be around the world, and it'll be, you know,
babies everywhere. I think talking about it has been so great, because when people say I love this or I love that, I've been able to experiment and try different things, and that's been one of the brilliant ways of developing this project, of just getting people's interests and trying things out.
Before I let you go, what are your plans for the rest of the weekend, this glorious, glorious weekend we're having?
I'm not sure. My wife's going over to Wales to see her mother, to say hello, and so I think I shall be taking the children somewhere. I'm not sure where yet. It'll be a mystery to her.
You have actually got a busy weekend planned, but you're just not entirely sure what you'll be doing.
Exactly.
In it.
Exactly.
When is your next visit to Gloucester Royal Hospital?
I'm hoping to squeeze another two in next week if I can. So they don't know that yet, but since there are babies being born all the time, they've been great. They just said, come in whenever.
Just whenever you can.
Whenever you can. Exactly.
How often do you tend to go then? So is it normally a couple of times a week?
During the projects, it's been about once a week or slightly less than once a week. But if we get the funding for the new thing, it'll be at least once a week. And that gives a bit of continuity. So everybody gets to hear it a bit once, you know? So,
oh, well, it sounds brilliant. I do hope you enjoy the rest of your weekend, then, whatever you might be doing.
Thank you very much.
Whatever you're dragged off to, or doing the dragging.
Doing the dragging,
yes. Yeah, exactly. And you're going to play us out, aren't you, with a tune that you've composed?
Well, I'm just going to make it up on the spot, actually. So it's based on your name, and let's see what happens.
Okay.
So I'll just play it, and then you can, if it gets too horrific, you can fade it out early. That's your name.
Beautiful. Mark Harmer, thank you very much for being our special Saturday lunchtime guest.
That's a pleasure. Thank you.
BBC Radio Gloucestershire.
With Manpreet Melly.